Welcome to Small Business Insights, where back office conversations give us insight to what's really going on. Is it grit or luck that gives a small business owner an advantage? Let's find out. I'm your host, Laura Fisher. Well, welcome today. I have Gary Krueger from PG Goff. You may not know the name, but he has the claim of being the world's largest recycled golf ball company. Say hello, Gary.
Hello, everybody.
Now, he's a little nervous, first time in his studio, but he's got a great story, and he has grown his business from being college boys at Texas A&M to a huge company, and that you could say you're the world's largest recycled claim, you know, golf ball company.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. Where'd you grow up and how'd you get here in Sugar Land?
So I was born in Chicago and grew up in Valparaiso, Indiana, about an hour outside of the city, and went through high school there and got recruited to play college golf at Texas A&M. So came to school at A&M, graduated from there, and proceeded to play professional golf for about 6 years. Couple of those years on the PGA Tour. So been in and around golf my whole life. Decided after 6 years of playing golf, trying to make a living at it, that I was unsure if I was really going to be able to accomplish what I wanted to as a golfer. And so I decided to move on and went into sales. I was a headhunter for about 5 years, and during that time stumbled upon an opportunity to buy this business that was very fledgling at the time, and just dove for some golf balls. And that was in 1992. So fast forward 30 years later, we just had our 30th anniversary, and here we are.
Wow. So let me ask you a question about being a golfer. How do they get paid? Is it just when you start off, is it just winnings? If you win a tournament, is that it?
That's it.
So that's how you're not sure you're going to make a career at it, right?
For sure.
When does a golfer start making money?
You know, you can make it immediately if you have the talent and you get out there and perform. You can win prize money day one. I had the good fortune of qualifying to get my PGA Tour card, my first attempt out of college. And so played out there on the tour in 1984. Unfortunately, I didn't have enough good days to make enough money to really support my desires.
So do you have to pay your own expenses and all that stuff when you start out?
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
And so you're paying
that's a lot for a young man.
Airfare and hotels and caddies and entry fees. And so you've got to do quite well, especially back in 1984, the prize money wasn't what it is today.
Right.
Today, I'd say there's probably, due to the Tiger Woods factor, been maybe 20, 30 times the prize money there was at that time.
So when you were golfing, who were the big guys at that time?
Oh, goodness. There were any number of them. Tom Lehman's a good friend of mine and was just coming on the scene at that time. I became a great player. Fred Couples was a couple years older, established, really good. Mm-hmm. Of course, it was at the tail end of people like Jack Nicklaus and Tom Watson, Gary Player, players like that. Had an opportunity to play
with. Still some pretty glamorous players, though.
Oh, yeah.
That really made it a classy game.
For sure.
Yeah. So you bought a small business doing what with golf balls?
So we actually purchased this business. They just had contracts to dive the lakes at Woodlands Country Club and Kingwood Country Club here in the Houston area. They were nice contracts and provided an opportunity to reclaim or recover a good number of golf balls out of them.
So but how does that work? Does a golf facility say, hey, I got too many balls in my pond, can somebody get them out? Is that what happens? Or does the golf ball recycling company say, hey, can I go get the balls out of your pond?
Yeah, we basically try to get the exclusive rights to do that dive work, and we compensate the golf course for those rights to pull the balls out. And so that's where we started.
So do you have problems with alligators and snakes and all that good stuff?
unfortunately, they're out there. And so it's work that's not for the faint of heart. So we've got some pretty amazing people that go out there and do that dive work for us. And yeah, there's been you know, some issues with snakes and gators through the years.
Yeah.
But largely, we've had good fortune, and those have been minimal issues.
So you started off with two or three. Now, where are you now? So 30 years later.
So we contract with 2,000 golf courses in 43 states now. And that first year, we might have actually sold maybe 200,000 golf balls. And we recently sold 52 million balls in 2021.
Oh, my goodness. Are you bringing them all to one location to package them, or you have places all over the country now?
So we do have general contractors all over the country, and that accumulate those balls and ship them all in here to Sugar Land. So we just built a brand new facility after 30 years. It's been a neat project, and really excited about our new place.
How many square feet is your new warehouse?
90,000 square feet of warehouse and office, all in one location. And so that's been great to get everything reorganized in one place. And
oh, I bet.
Yeah, production flow set up that is efficient, and it's a big improvement from where we were.
So now, golf balls, they are waterproof. Is that right? Is that why you can do this?
So an interesting thing happened with golf balls along the way. In about the year 2000, Titleist created the Pro V1 golf ball that really has a solid core and a cover. Prior to that, golf balls had liquid centers, rubber bands, and more permeable covers. And so there was a lot more damage to those golf balls years ago. Since the advent of these solid core golf balls in 2000, been a real benefit to our business, because there's very little issues with those golf balls that sit in the water. And so most of the golf balls that we get out come out pretty quickly after they've been lost in the water. And most of them perform just like new.
Now, I'm not a golfer, so I don't know, are there more than, how many brands of golf balls are out there?
Oh, goodness. I can't even name all the brands that are out there. There's really four or five major brands, and that's a preponderance of the golf balls. So that you know, simplifies things somewhat, but there are all kinds of small brands.
Are they all the same? Are they all pretty much all the same? Or
not really. Interestingly, golf balls do have quite different characteristics from one model to the next. And, you know, I think across the premium brands, you get, you know, somewhat similar performance, but there are certainly differences, and that's why you know, Titleist is played by most of the players on tour, and is the number one ball in golf.
Well, do you have to sort the balls when they come in? Do people, when they sell them, do you repackage them by the title, by the brand?
We do, and so it just depends on where we're selling the product. We do sell some of the middle tier to lower tier balls in bulk with a variety of models and qualities. And as we get to more of our direct to consumer business, we really get to a more granular level with that sortation. And so we've implemented vision systems and AI and machine learning to do that sortation.
Yeah, I was wondering how you do that. Is it one guy, you know, standing over a table? I guess it's how it started.
For sure.
Right. So how has the technology helped you to sort these things?
Yeah. So both speed and consistency with you know, the automated sortation that we do now. And it's been quite a evolution, going from, like you said, described sorting them by hand one at a time to trying to do that at a bigger level. I used to say that we had the best trash can basketball players in the world in our location as well, when we did when we went to trash cans for all of our sorting. But now you know, using these vision systems is a whole new thing. And I joked many years ago that I really loved our business, because we were not only low tech, we were no tech.
Yeah.
But now we're very much a technology business.
Yeah. So what is your role in the company?
So I function as the CEO of the company, and I have for these 30 years. And it's been something that's been a lot of fun for me, because as we've grown from just a few employees to probably 120 employees and another 50, 60 contractors. It's been a real evolution and learning process for me. So it's been fun to really see my job change on a daily, weekly, annual basis.
Absolutely. Now, I'm thinking, well, you have so many logistics going on too. You've got to get your contractors to bring you your product to resell and clean and all that stuff. How did you learn, and how do you make those decisions when it's time to upgrade your system? And I'm sure now that you're technology oriented, when there's a failure, how do you handle that?
Failures happen all the time as we try to evolve the technology, and you just try to do things. I try to do things on a small enough scale that when things do fail, it doesn't ruin the company. But we're constantly looking at the scale of the different parts of our operation to see when it makes sense to automate and to enable ourselves to do things at a larger level.
Is it always easy to make those decisions, or is it? What's it like when you have those growth problems? How do you sort through that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's easy to know when you can make some of those transitions. It's difficult to know how to make those transitions, and probably even more importantly, how to pay for those transitions. Yeah.
So obviously, you have to start asking for help, right?
For sure.
Where did you start to get capital, to get that next level knowledge? Where did you find the relationships, the vendors, the bankers to help you grow? Where'd you start?
You know, I wasn't as many stages in business, not sure where to go. And I think it was always important to me to have some people that I could lean on and really mentors along the way. And so I had mentors that really helped me with growing the business, I think, from a personnel standpoint, number one. And then I've had a CPA for 25 years. It's really more of a business advisor than a CPA that has helped me with a lot of decisions and had a lot of relationships with bankers, for instance.
Yeah.
That I think because of those relationships, we were able to get bankers to do things that they might not have always done.
Right, he can go to bat for you.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah. So what? How do you get through all the insurance, the legal? I'm sure you got some legal issues. Everybody's got legal issues every once in a while, right? How do you learn and get through those things? Because it's the buck stops at your desk because you're the CEO, you're the founder, you're everything. So you've had to learn it all.
No question. And I think importantly, in addition to, you know, specific mentors, I've always been part of CEO organizations where I've kind of got a group of 7 or 8 CEOs that I meet with on a mm-hmm. monthly basis. I've been doing that for 20 years. And those guys really have functioned as a board of advisors. And I find that we all have shared experiences, common experiences that we can benefit from one another's knowledge in one area or another. And that's really helped me, I think, reduce the number of mistakes that I've made along the way.
So as your company has grown and as you've grown and matured, how has the staff matured? Do you have a successor? Do you feel confident that when you're ready to retire, it's going to keep going?
I do. I've had, I think, real good fortune along the way of hiring some great people. I've got my COO has been with me 22 years. I've got a CFO and a VP of purchasing that started within the same week of one another and have now been with us for 18 years, and a number of other people that have been with us 10 plus years. So, yeah, I feel very confident that, you know, when I decide it's my time to move on, that we've got a really good team ready to go.
Well, that says a lot for your management style, that you've maintained longevity and loyalty from your staff.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. You can't see him, but he's a good-looking, clean-cut-looking guy, very mild-mannered, and I would think you have a sense of calm in your management style. Am I right?
Absolutely.
I
feel like I'm always able to be reasonable with respect to hearing things out, not get emotional, and I think it's helped me treat people well and make good decisions along the way.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about how he started off selling to the wholesalers, but now he has changed his business model and he's doing direct to the consumer. So it'll give you an opportunity to figure out how to buy these balls and why it's a good deal. So we'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. Thank you for listening to Small Business Insights. Today's show is sponsored by Keffi Spaces, new location in Houston. Air-conditioned warehouse units with loading docks, carrier services, fulfillment, break room, free Wi-Fi. The perfect place to grow your e-commerce business. Keffi Spaces, located in the Design District of Houston. And now back to Small Business Insights.
All right, we're back with Gary Krueger from PG Golf, but let's find out where we can find and purchase these balls. So tell me, where can I buy your product? What is the name of it? And why did you change about going direct to the consumer? I know it's a loaded question, but just kind of break it down for us.
So PG Golf is our overall corporate name, but if you go looking for our product at Academy Sporting Goods, Dick's Sporting Goods, Walmart, you'll find us under the Reload Recycled Golf Ball brand. And so that's been our brand for the last better part of 30 years in the stores.
So what's it called?
Reload Recycled Golf Balls.
What color is it?
So Reload packages are a variety of colors.
Okay. And when I look to buy that, I'm sure I can do it online with those vendors. Yeah, I think, did you say Walmart as well? You could get on Walmart?
Correct.
So what do I search for? Recycled golf balls?
Recycled golf balls, typically online. And, you know, our product has had a lot of success at retail like that. As a matter of fact, if you go into Academy stores, about 25% of their golf balls are Reload recycled golf balls.
How much?
25%.
And is that because they sell? I mean, I would prefer it because I'm afraid I'm going to lose a golf ball because I would be a novice golfer, right?
Yeah, so recycled golf balls sell, you know, the best ones sell at roughly 50% of the cost of new.
Oh, wow.
And so when the consumer sees that in store, it's real easy for them to see the value proposition that's there.
Do they look bright and white or do they look brown and dirty?
They look bright and white, okay, for the most part. We do sell, you know, like some big tubs of balls that are some of the lower quality balls for the customer that just knows they're going to go out and lose 10 or 20 balls when they go out and play.
Yeah.
So they need a lot of volume.
Do you sell a lot to like school districts and collegiate?
We don't sell to those places much. We do sell a lot back to golf courses. So if you go in a golf shop, you might see a bowl of balls or a tub of balls that you can go in and pick through and purchase or package balls.
All right. So now you started off your business being a wholesaler. So, but now, and that's when you're, well, tell me how that worked and how you changed and why you changed to go direct to the consumer.
So I guess 30 years ago, the internet probably didn't really exist at retail. So that was why we started out as a wholesaler and really focused our attention on the mass merchants.
And that was that having your product and having them sell it for you.
Correct.
Okay.
And so we focused on sporting goods retail, mass merchants, golf retail. And that was really what our entire business consisted of. And then that thing called the internet came along,
right,
and we took a look at it and said, oh, this is kind of interesting. So we started dabbling with it, really, and having some success. There's always selling to the big box retailers. There's always strains of inventories and excess inventories that don't really have a home in a certain type of package that you've created. And you've got to get creative to try to figure out how to sell it.
Yeah, you want to get it off your shelf.
Yep. And so that was initially where the online business came in, was we could take any golf ball and create a SKU and sell it direct to consumer because it needed to find a home.
Right.
And then that just started evolving. And it became evident to us that, you know, for a lot of reasons, it made more sense for us to focus on the direct consumer sales, in addition, really, to the wholesale side of the business.
But in order to do that, you had to repackage. You renamed, so you have two packaging, right, products and a different way to buy it. So if I'm going to say, hey, I really like the way Gary sounds today, I'm going to go check his product out, you would prefer me to buy it direct from you because you get a better profit margin off of that, At least you should, right?
That's right. And there's a lot more options that we offer the consumer
right.
at our URL, which is lostgolfballs.com.
Which I like. It's easy. Lost Golf Balls. You kind of get the idea of all the ponds you've been fishing through, right?
All right. So same thing there. You know, there's literally hundreds of different brands and model and quality combinations of golf balls, which we can offer at lostgolfballs.com. Whereas we may only have a handful of different products that we have set up to sell at a specific big box retailer.
Right. So, and how long you been doing that, the direct to the consumer?
Oh, I think we started more than 10 years ago. And really over the last probably 5 or 6 years, it's gotten to be a substantial part of our business.
That's great. I guess, well, how did you pivot your business? I mean, yeah, that's a completely different, because now you have marketing, and what did you have to do?
You know, that's where we really had to get into a lot more sophisticated sortation of the golf balls. Mm-hmm. We might have only had to break them down, say, into 10 or 20 different types of golf ball combinations of brand, model, and quality, like I described, for the wholesale business, whereas now we literally have hundreds of different brand, model, quality combinations and hundreds of items that we have set up to sell on our website.
So when you sort through, when you're cleaning and you're sorting through the golf balls, can you tell how old a golf ball is?
Pretty well.
I'm just curious.
It's especially easy on some of the brands and models that I just described. They actually are by year model, so you know what year.
Oh, so it's already on there, the marking.
It may not say a year, but mm-hmm. we know the marking is affiliated with the year. And so we can tell that way. And really a visual sort tells you if a ball, you know, is virtually brand new, and or if it's maybe got some discoloration, it's been sitting in a pond a little while,
yeah.
things like that.
So I'm just curious, because I'm sure my listeners are too. How do you do it? How do you clean those balls? What's going on?
So we kind of have a batch process set up. They're big tubs that hold about 30,000 balls per tub.
That's a lot of weight.
We convey that. It is. Really nice thing about golf balls, they weigh 1/10 of a pound each.
Okay.
And so it's been very easy for us to do that math through the years and know how much weight we're dealing with. We convey balls from one bin to the next of, you know, with a wash solution in them, and have a variety of wash machines. And
is it like you just throw a batch of bleach in there? What do you do? or is there scrubbing? You know, what do you have to do?
I will give away the secret.
Oh, okay.
Pool chlorine is part of the process.
Oh, but your cost of goods have gone up quite a bit then, because the pool chlorine has skyrocketed, right, in prices?
Well, I think we all in business can say cost of goods in every which way has gone up considerably. It's been the last couple of years have been quite extraordinary.
And have you had to pass that on to the consumer? Have your prices gone up?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately.
Right.
All right. So tell us how we can reach you. And why would we want to reach you? I mean, obviously to purchase your product, to get to know you more. Sounds like you got a beautiful facility. Can somebody come and check it out, buy the product at your new facility? Are you set up for that?
We don't retail out of our location. Actually can't in the warehouse business park that we're
okay.
in. You know, I am open to being contacted by our customers and hear what you think about our products. Gary.Kruger@pggolf.com is the easiest way to reach out to me.
All right.
As well, we have two websites, pggolf.com and lostgolfballs.com, where you can check out all of our products that we have to offer, both wholesale and retail. And love hearing from people about our products, good, bad, and indifferent. It's always about learning and growing.
Well, I find your story inspiring. Here you are, out of college, starting to fish golf balls out of ponds, and you've made it into probably a multi-million-dollar company over the last 30 years, and that's quite an accomplishment and inspiring.
I appreciate it.
Yeah,
it's been fun.
Thank you. I'm glad you were on the show today. Until next time, you better be up to something. Thanks for joining us this week on Small Business Insights. Make sure you visit our website at fisherpodcast.com, where you can follow the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform, so you'll never miss a show. If you enjoyed and found value in today's episode, we'd appreciate a rating and review on iTunes, or simply share it with a friend. That would help us out too. Make sure you tune in next week for our next episode. Until then, you better be up to something.